championship on the line right here. He's going for the corner. He's got it.
Hello and welcome to 4th and 5, your Longhorn Nation podcast. I'm your host, Will Baser, and I'm joined alongside by Darius Terrell as always. You guys listen to the Hornscast channel. It's the Hornscast channel on any podcasting platform out there. Today we're going to be talking about that insane game that happened in Lubbock. Crazy things happened in Lubbock. And another absolutely insane thing happened in Lubbock as Texas takes a 15-point deficit and reduces it to 0 in 3 minutes and then wins it in overtime. Absolutely insane. Then bring on Parker Fleming, Stats of War of Football Outsiders and Purple Theory to come and talk about Texas's next opponent in TCU. Darius, where were you and what were you doing when Sam Ellinger threw that 2-point conversion?
I can honestly say when Texas plays, my butt is sitting in front of the TV typing, doing the live, recap deal. Unfortunately, this upcoming Saturday will be the first that I won't get to do that because my son plays around the same time. But I actually was sitting on the couch. I saw that 2-point conversion of Brendan Eagles. If Texas fans, if you go back and watch that play again with Brendan Eagles, if Brendan Eagles wasn't wearing a helmet, that ball wouldn't have been caught. It hit him right in the face mask before he double caught it again. So, but I was right there, Will. I saw it. I
did not see. Some more Brendan Eagles slander, right?
I'm telling the truth.
I'm not saying you are. You're just coming out swinging, man.
And let's keep it a buck too. He drops the ball every game. But anyways, I didn't see what happened after Sir Roderick Thompson broke on his long run. I changed the channel mid play, and I had no intention of turning it back until I got a couple text messages, and I was like, what? And then I click over. I see Josh Morris touchdown, and then I see Brendan Eagles, and voila, overtime it is.
Yeah, I was in the middle of driving and just listening to the radio. I picked the wrong weekend to say, oh, I'm going to go on a vacation. I've watched it over and over and over again since then, so I can talk about it.
It wasn't fun.
I was sitting in my Airbnb in Colorado trying to watch the last few minutes of it and then the overtime, sweating.
So Oklahoma lost this morning and Texas fans talking all this stuff, laughing, ha-ha, all day.
I sent a tweet out and I was like, Spencer Rattler's the best quarterback in the Big 12. And then I immediately was like, oh, shit, that's going to bite me in the ass.
Yeah, turn around in a nail biter with Tech the entire time. And Texas was never comfortable in the game. I'm like, this sucks.
Right. And you knew it from the first drive when Texas went down the field in 75 yards, super fast, super easy. And you're like, okay, we're looking good. And then Tech, 75 yards, and what was it, 6 plays with 5 broken tackles in the first series that's more broken tackles than the entirety of UTEP. It was definitely a lot different of a game and a lot different of a pace that Texas was not ready for when it came to this level of play.
No, it's just, you know, what you were hoping all week, you know, didn't come true. It didn't become a shootout. It didn't become something weird, you know, with not any. I don't know if were there fans. I think it was a couple fans, a little bit of fans in there, right? Mm-hmm. I mean, it was like 10,000, something like that.
Yeah.
You just, you know, you hoped that, you know, it wouldn't be anything freaky. Texas would get a good, you know, 2 touchdown, you know, 17-point lead or something like that, and just, you know, cruise. But no, there were no chances.
They couldn't get the 17. You knew as soon as they got the 17 that it would be good, but they just couldn't push past 10. And it was so frustrating, whether it was special teams or a gaffe, a drop pass, a misfire, a missed tackle. It was something or other that just stopped Texas from getting to that 17 point where you could feel comfortable as a fan and be like, okay, we're 3 scores ahead. We're good. We can loosen our buttholes. I don't know. That's a weird way to say it, but yeah.
I'm gonna leave my butthole out of it.
That's true. You're right. Let's leave buttholes out of this. But you know, it was ugly as shit. Speaking of buttholes, however, I do think it was a special mix. This game, it was a close game that they were supposed to run away with, right? 2, winning from behind when it came down to the wire, and 3. They were down and given improbable odds of coming back, but they did come back. I think all 3 of those things give them a lot to learn. Now, they not only know not to take a lesser team for granted, but also how to come together as a team and come from behind when they need to be clutch. I think those are some very important lessons that this game gave these guys. And usually it takes a few games to get these. You know, you learn that one game at a time. Unfortunately, I guess, or fortunately, Texas learned them all within the span of 4 hours.
Man, if this in year four of Tom Herman, if this team, these seniors, juniors, redshirt juniors, sophomores, they still taking folks for granted after everything Texas has been through the past decade, man, it ain't gonna happen with Herman in charge. But what we learned is week one was an aberration. Absolutely. I think the announcer even said it on the television. Tech pretty much was preparing for Texas the entire offseason. They went back through all of Chris Ash's stuff at Rutgers and everything, and this was the game they were most worried about. They didn't even look at Houston Baptist. And what you saw, those guys that didn't play together, but also they weren't prepared for that game. And what you saw against Texas was a team that was prepared for them. They just capitalized on all the things that I still feel like the Texas defense, you know, defensively, I felt like they struggled with a year ago. And Will, if in the Big 12, I mean, the Texas was, yeah, they were showing some press, but it was soft. Like you said earlier, it was soft and they were giving Tech the short stuff. And if you can't come up and make a tackle, it doesn't matter what you can do. I mean, what the heck can you do as a defensive coach? You know, you're damned if you do, damned if you don't.
And a lot of the missed tackles, and by my count on that game, there were 29 missed tackles throughout that game, which is an insane number. I mean, I'm watching it thinking, you know, when did everybody turn into CeeDee Lamb? Or am I rewatching the 2015 Oklahoma State game? What is going on here? They're blaming that right now on lack of a spring ball, lack of summer, lack of fall training, and, you know, trying to install a new tackling philosophy. It's a little hard to buy.
Everybody all had the same disadvantage this offseason, right?
Right.
Again, the lack of a pass rush that we're seeing from guy, you know, Joseph Osai is going to be, he's not going to have anything left. They should be carrying him to the plane or to his apartment after every game because he's the only semblance of a pass rush right now.
Really, you know, when you look at what the problem was, I guess if you want to start here with defense, it wasn't that it was a terrible defensive game plan. It wasn't great. It definitely wasn't great.
Texas didn't blitz much, did they?
They blitzed some, but they allowed for Texas Tech to isolate them in grass and isolate them one-on-one and get matchups like Keyshawn Carter against Juwan Mitchell or Eric Ezekama against Jalen Green. However, our boy CJ Vogel put out on Twitter that Texas Tech had, what was it? The total distance of the throw to the target was 149 yards. The total yards gained through the air, 325. So really, yards after catch, 179 yards. That is like take away 2-3 touchdowns from Texas Tech. The game plan could have been better, but the execution of said game plan was atrocious. You can't have 29 missed tackles and say, oh yeah, the game plan was terrible. You don't even know what the game plan really was because it was not executed at all.
No.
Whether it was pass rush, whether it was your covering of your defensive backs, because Deshaun Jamison kept on getting punked out there. And, you know, they just couldn't tackle. Where the crap? The only thing Texas did well was to hold Texas Tech to just under 2 yards per rush throughout the entire game. Their rush defense was great, but it was overshadowed by the 75-yard touchdown by Sherrodrick Thompson, which included 3 missed tackles.
I don't know. It's 2 different coordinators, 2 different staffs. Like, Texas is the only school that recruited high-rated guys, the only high-rated guys in the country that really couldn't play. Like, I don't get it. I don't get it. I've never seen anything like it.
I mean, I just don't think it was. We can prove one way or another that the game plan was bad. There weren't blown assignments on either side of the ball. Really, it was just bad execution. And again, as you said, I'm not saying that we give the defensive coaches a break because their job is to teach the players how to execute these concepts and how to tackle and how to set yourself up. There are certain things like Josh Thompson standing out on the outside shoulder of TJ Vasher, giving him an easy inside release, which ended up giving him a slant route for a touchdown. Part of this is on the players, part of it's on the coaches, but a lot of people are saying, oh, the game plan was awful. I don't know if you can say the game plan was bad, but the execution of that game plan was just awful.
If you can't rush the passer, if you can't get to the quarterback in the Big 12, the absolute least you can do is get a hold of the guy and hold on at least till everybody else comes. I don't know how you survive in this conference, and people can knock it all they want, but Iowa State is going to come to play. TCU is going to come to play. Baylor is going to come to play. Kansas State is going to come to play.
Texas is a target on its back every single week.
Every week. And it's not just Texas. The conference is going to beat up on each other. I think so. I could easily see a conference champion in the Big 12 this year having two losses, possibly even three losses. Also, something that worries me, and it has something to do with the play calling as well, but I would think from a fourth-year quarterback, he would have the leeway now to kind of, you know, check out of stuff if he wanted to, if he saw something.
And we're going to offense now?
Yeah, let me flip the offense real quick. Sam Ehlinger has shown consistently over these now 3 years plus, Will, that he will every single game pretty much, or at least 90% of the games, at some point in the game, he's going to go into a slump. And I've seen guys on our message board mention that as well, posters. He goes into slumps during these games. And last year he went into the slump against TCU. He ended up throwing, what, 4 interceptions? And he was the reason Texas couldn't win that game. Sam Ehlinger, even now in year 4 as a senior against Texas Tech, went through a slump in the middle of a game for pretty much the entire third quarter until the final 3 minutes of the game. That's going to cost them a game this year. And I don't know what that is or what causes it. And even if it's all his fault, right? But there are times in the game where he just, you know.
Right. He was off from the start at the start of the third quarter. I think he even started with a pass behind Brennan Schooler.
And I like Sam Ehlinger.
But at the same time, he wasn't helped. There were, two big drops.
That is true. That is true. That's a good point.
Drops in the second half.
Yeah, I remember Kay Brewer dropping one.
You had three major drops. You had a drop touchdown by Marcus Washington. Mm-hmm. It could have been a better ball from Sam Ehlinger. You had a drop first down from Cade Brewer, which, you know, again, it was hard for him because he had a guy draped on him. And
that's because he can't get any separation.
You had Brennan Eagles, who dropped another ball. And again, I guess it could have been a better ball, but it was a pretty good ball. That also in the first half, you know, you had a few drops from guys, including it was the second drive of the game where Texas only got 3 points because Brennan Schooler short-armed a absolutely beautiful ball from Sam Ehlinger.
That's true.
You know, that's one thing that was like Texas couldn't get past 10 points. That was a big reason because there were some major drops. So Sam Ehlinger, yeah, he was off. He wasn't helped either by the offensive line or by his wide receivers. And the run game wasn't helping much either outside Keyonte Ingram. If we're going to the offense, you have to talk about the stubborn game plan on the offensive side of the ball until the game made them change their plans. And, you know, I'll start off with saying I was wrong in the last show. The best way to beat Texas Tech was not by setting up the pass with the run. It's vice versa. It was setting up the run with the pass. So get your pass going first, because Texas Tech's weakness is the defensive backs and their strength is the linebackers. So attack their weakness first, right? That's what you do in the Big 12. You attack weaknesses. You put your strengths up against your opponent's weakness. And Texas decided, we'll take our chances with Texas Tech's best part of their defense, which is their linebackers and their run stoppers up front, and went 11 and 12 personnel. A big reason Sam Ehlinger and the offensive line really couldn't get going is because Texas Tech was bringing everybody into the box to stop the run, and they didn't have to really worry about the pass because there's two tight ends out there, which the linebackers can cover, and they were ineffective in the pass game. So Tom Herman and I guess Yurcich were trotting out there in the 12 and 11 personnel and basically giving Texas Tech their best players on the field.
I would like to see Jared Wiley get some of Kay Brewer's chances down the field. I don't think that's unfair. You know, well, Kay Brewer's gained about 35 pounds since he's been on campus, 40, and he's had the ACL.
Mm-hmm.
If you watch him, and if you haven't, Texas fans, if you do this Saturday, just watch Kay Brewer when he split out wide. Watch him run down the field. He's laboring. It's like he's hurting. He gets zero separation. It's like he might as well. And I like Kay Brewer. He's got great hands when the ball is near him. You know, he's a good player. He's a tough guy, team leader. But I want to see Jared Wiley, you know, down the field with his 6'6", 6'7" frame get an opportunity with his athleticism, get an opportunity, right?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, Texas, there were times where they didn't give themselves the best opportunity, and yet they still scored 63 points. There were times when they missed opportunities with drop passes. They still, Texas could have scored 80 points this past weekend. I'm not going to chalk it up to it being an anomaly, this defense performance, because it's not. But I just hope and pray that is something that we'll look back on and see was something that was an oddity during the season and not something that became, you know, what we become accustomed to in 2020.
Right. And again, going back to the game plan, what the game plan made possible for Tech is it made it come down to the Tech's linebackers versus Texas's tight ends. And you're saying, as you said, like, it's Texas's quote unquote best tight end is laboring. And it allowed the safeties to shoot up the field and help run stuffing and, you know, without and Texas didn't even try to punish them for it. They didn't try to go downfield until late in the game. And they were just trying the run game out. And I guess you can look at that in two ways. You can say they were forcing it or they were being patient, because when the run game did hit, it hit hard. Keontae Ingram averaged 7 yards a carry. He weeded through holes and made guys miss. Sam was 16 for 69 with one touchdown on the ground. Yes, a few of those were scrambles, but a lot of those were designed runs. I'll take two off that because two of those were designed runs in the last drive where Texas spread it out. But a lot of that was Sam Ehlinger, you know, being very effective on third down. However, when Texas was loading the box and throwing bodies in there, why are you still forcing the issue and playing to their strength? That is the biggest question I had against for this run game and this entire game plan. That's why I think the game plan was a big problem for this offense.
Yeah, I would love to be privy to the game tape that the coaches see and the players see. I wonder, because, I mean, Josh Moore had 3 touchdowns, what, on 5 catches for 74, 84 yards. I wonder how many more times Josh Moore was open during this game and Texas didn't get him the ball. I mean, in Texas Tech's not a good defensive team. From the third quarter to the end of the fourth, Will, that looked just like last year. I don't know, and we don't know what the exact case is, but I'm concerned, man. I'm concerned. Hey, they survived Tech. It starts to give me a slight migraine thinking about it. I have so many concerns for this upcoming game against TCU. I don't have a lot of confidence going into TCU this week.
Oh, you talked about Josh Moore. I do want to talk a little bit about the wide receivers after that game, because I don't know if Josh Moore is a beast. That guy is great. That dude is coming back. He did everything he was supposed to, and he's coming back and doing well. But, you know, you can talk about Marcus Washington or Tariq Black, who are just absolutely not there.
Tariq Black's body language was terrible the entire game. I wonder if something was up.
Also, you can look at Brennan Eagles, and I know you want to look at him differently as a wide receiver. I think you should. He is your best blocker. He is a very physical player who can take, you know, advantage of a cornerback in close space and get some separation. You saw that in the 2-point conversion, but he's not going to get space vertically. You need to reimagine how you use Brennan Eagles in your offense.
I mean, I think he's a deep threat. I mean, he's shown he consistently can get down the field on people. He doesn't consistently catch the football. You got a point. He's a good blocker. He's a pretty good blocker. But so Texas went to Brennan Eagles for that 2-point conversion in a 1-on-1 situation. And he won in a 1-on-1 situation. What was it? He faked the fade on a wide release and brought the guy back inside on the slant.
Mm-hmm.
He won a 1-on-1 matchup. And that's a game time situation. And that's the Texas coaching staff and quarterback saying, I mean, the coaching staff won for setting it up that way, where he was 1-on-1 down at the bottom. And then on Ehlinger saying, hey, we're choosing this guy over this guy in this crunch time situation, and he made a play. So maybe it's something he can build off of moving forward.
No, another thing I noticed about the wide receivers, there's two more things I have about the wide receivers, was it was really nice to see wide receivers coming back to the ball when Ehlinger was flushed instead of just seeing them stand around.
Yeah.
With Mehringer as your wide receivers coach, that was not the case. Those guys were standing and waiting for Sam Ehlinger to throw the ball. And that was one of my biggest complaints last year. This game, you saw it 3 times, I think, and it helped Sam Ehlinger every single time. I think they got 3 first downs out of it, was when guy like Brennan Eagles or whoever came back to the ball when Sam Ehlinger was flushed.
No, that's a good point. That's a good point. That's something you definitely, you know, the casual fan could take for granted. It's something I can say I hadn't thought about But no, absolutely. There were guys coming back to the ball. That's true. Yeah, Andre Coleman, you know, he's doing his job. I think he's earning his money so far. Guys were open, right, Will? Again, they were just drop passes. It happens.
Yeah.
You hope they got him out, though.
And speaking of the pass game, and honestly, the game plan in general, we kind of talked about it in our last show. The screen game for Texas worked. A lot of fans hate the bubble screen. A lot of fans. And for some, you know, good reason. However, that bubble screen was pretty damn effective at getting them ahead of schedule on the early downs. Early downs being the key. And even gave them a touchdown. But the majority of the time, yes, sometimes they were tackled behind the line of scrimmage. I can think of one time specifically. But majority of the time, they were getting 5 yards at least out of that bubble screen.
I don't know about that. They were getting more like 2 yards. I hate that. I might as well hand the ball off.
No, man. They were getting 5 yards. It was impressive. I was going through and tracking it. There was 10 bubble screens they threw. Two of those didn't go for 5 yards or more.
I hope it's not in the offense this weekend, Will. I hope it's not in the offense.
It worked. It worked. You know, one thing that really did have one unit that did have a rough game was that offensive line. And it's weird because Tom Herman said that during the press conference that the offensive line played better than he thought after watching the film. And I don't know what he thought the offensive line was supposed to be before he watched the film. Was he like thinking it was a bunch of middle schoolers and he's like watching the film? Is like, oh no, these guys are too big. Okay, much better than I thought they were. Junior Angulo had a rough game.
Junior Angulo doesn't get enough heat. He doesn't get enough heat. I agree with that.
He messed up quite a few times and that allowed Texas Tech to blow up a lot of different runs. It was a lot more on him than I was expecting. You know, there was obviously some big mistakes, especially when it came to penalties, which I'll get into in a second. But Junior Angulo is, like, you're right, not getting enough heat for the mistakes he's making and getting pushed back as much as he is.
I agree, man. He doesn't seem like an improved player from this past season so far through two games.
Right. Texas often lost in the run game. Even when they had the man advantage, it was a lot due to those two guard positions, whether it was Okafor or Angulo.
I don't know what Okafor has to do to get taken off the field. You know, just because he's a senior or what.
Right.
Or if other guys just aren't healthy. Where's Tyler Johnson? Where's Isaiah Hookfin? I thought Christian Jones was okay through the first three quarters or so. I really did.
Honestly, I'm giving a lot of heat to the run game, but they did get their assignments most of the time. Yes, there are a lot of blown plays because of poor offensive line play in the run game. But really, I think the biggest complaint I have about the offensive line is the lack of discipline. Texas had 10 penalties for 100 yards throughout the game. 7 out of those 10 penalties and 65 out of those 100 yards were on the offensive line. And 3 out of Texas's 9 stalled drives were caused by those penalties.
Yeah, and it definitely threw stuff. It threw drives off. I think I remember one drive. What was it, in the fourth quarter? Late in the fourth quarter, I think it was false start, blown assignment in the run game, tackle for loss, and then sack on the 3-down front.
Yeah.
that was the 3-and-out. And I'm just like, man.
Or they get a pass down the middle to Brandon Schooler, and you're like, okay, well, this is a good start to the drive. Oh, no, there's a hold.
Yeah.
Okay. You get another pass down. All right. Oh, there was another blatant hold or something like that. Chop block. It was just one thing or another with this offensive line, and that is not acceptable. They did actually okay in the pass game, the pass protection. You know, it wasn't terrible in the pass protection.
There just were times where it was terrible, and it seemed to happen at really bad times.
Yeah.
And the penalties and stuff. It's just that this group has to get better, man. They play like they played this weekend. In my opinion, again, Texas is going to lose multiple games. And I know folks don't want to hear that, but, I mean, seriously.
Before we get to what happened, what was the turnaround late, I want to talk about the defense one more time because Alfred Collins needs to start. That dude is a monster. And I don't know how you're going to do that because Taquan Graham is a captain, and he actually did okay at times. Not in the pass rush, but in the run game, he did okay, especially late. But, you know, Alfred Collins is just the guy who needs to be out there.
I've about given up on the Taquan Graham deal. He's played a lot of snaps. There's just hadn't been a whole lot of times where I've noticed him out there. Alfred Collins has been out there a lot fewer snaps, Will, and he's flashed a bunch more times already. Forget all the seniority stuff, which we're trying to win. It's year 4, right?
Mm-hmm.
I'm not a Taquan Graham guy either. I heard a lot of guys I'm just not a fan of right now, it seems like, I guess.
Well, I mean, here's one thing I'm not a fan of, especially going into TCU, is the linebacker play in pass protection, because there are a lot of times where you saw Juwan Mitchell or DeMarvion Overshown flat-footed, and which allowed for a guy like Keyshawn Carter to get behind them, or Jalen Polk, or whoever it was. They're not dropping back. They're not eating the space behind them whenever a guy gets behind them, and that caused a lot of issues for Texas. That and the spur position with Chris Adamora.
I thought they, after they got lit up by Keyshawn Carter the first couple of series, I thought they did adjust to that.
And that's what allowed for the two interceptions as well.
Yeah, because they were still trying to – yeah.
That's what Chris Adamora's interception taken almost all the way back was, because – he finally dropped back instead of being flat-footed.
I thought it was more Tech trying to be aggressive after a turnover or a change of momentum. And
That was Brown.
It was coordinator calling it and the quarterback forcing it, you know, trying to be aggressive as well. I didn't think Chris Adamora did anything special on that play. And you know, I thought
That was Chris Brown. I was talking about the one where Adamora took it almost all the way back.
No, I'm saying even that one. That was Tech trying to, I think Tech has just got a turnover or something that happened. They're trying to push. They're trying to flip to take charge of the game. And how did Chris Adamora not score on that play? What the hell? What was that? What was that by the guys around
him? Side got in front of him.
There was like five other guys. What the hell are y'all doing? Y'all let a lineman. Is everybody like really thinking about trying to be a part of the picture at the end? I hope that wasn't what it was. I thought that was ridiculous.
Yeah.
But yeah.
But I think that's going to be an issue, is they need to figure out how they're going to help out those linebackers, because when they tried to do it against Texas Tech and bring up a safety to help them, it was a disaster and left them wide open for a touchdown in one of Tech's many explosive touchdown plays. So, tell me, what was the difference between the third and the majority of the fourth quarter in the last 3 minutes of the fourth quarter? There's one answer.
It's the quarterback.
Okay. Two answers. Yes, Sam Ehlinger, he just has that it factor, that winner ability. But also what really helped him out was the personnel. They dropped 11 and 12 personnel and went 10 and open set. And what the 10 personnel did is it gave them some advantages. Tech had to match them by adding another defensive back on the field and taking away a linebacker. So you took off one of their best players. Now they can't get any pass rush because they can't sacrifice a linebacker in the pass rush, especially when you have to have one spying Sam. It's 3 against 5 in the front against Texas Tech's defensive line in Texas, 3 versus 5. Yeah, Texas Tech won a few times, but that was when Texas had to worry about a linebacker blitzing. Without having to worry about that linebacker, Texas had a lot more success going up against this tired defensive line. So that's what happened there. You know, you left the stubborn 11 and 12 personnel behind, put your tight end out wide, or at least replaced him with somebody else, and that opened up the gate. Going through each one of these plays, the first play, 10 personnel, 4 verts, a shot down the field, you got 15 plus yards out of it. Second play, 4 verts again. Third play, deep cross across the middle of the field with 2 verts on the outside, again, 10 personnel. And that was successful. Fourth play is a smash route on the field side again with the field spread out to touchdown to Brennan Eagles. It was that easy. Four plays, and it's a touchdown. Why? Texas Tech can't give you pass rush. They can't stop you in the pass game. And they don't have their extra linebacker out there. Texas luckily gets the onside kick. 5th, 6th, and 7th play, both are well covered, but the routes were there to stretch out the field. So you take, the linebackers are back, safeties are back, they can't come up and run protection. So what happens in the next play? 8th and 9th play are designed runs for Sam. You get your guys up to the next level, take out the linebackers who are spread out and way back and looking for a pass. This is what Texas should have been doing most of the game. Setting up the run with the pass. Get those linebackers on their heels and then attack with the run. And then, you know, you had 2 penalties by the offensive line. But the 10th play, empty backfield, run a vertical switch, and Ehlinger puts the ball on the outside shoulder for a touchdown. It was beautiful. It's what you needed.
Yeah.
And it was that simple. 10 plays, 2 touchdowns.
Oh, yeah. Nailed it.
That was the difference.
No, you nailed it.
10 personnel, an empty set.
So I hope. I mean, hey, if we see 10 personnel versus TCU, will Texas still be able to run the ball with those linebackers?
What do you mean? Yeah, I guess.
If we see 10 personnel versus TCU, will Texas still be able to run the ball against a 6-man box with those linebackers there?
It'll be interesting. Against TCU, I don't know. It's because they also have a very good defensive backfield. The problem there is you have to figure out how to attack their weakness, which is the defensive line. I guess, you know, it's difficult to cover a wide receiver forever. So if you're just going to have them, you know, try to rush 3 or 4 guys against your 5, you're usually going to win that battle.
Yeah, but then also, if you remember the OU game, Texas OU game last year, OU had a linebacker that could spy Sam Ehlinger, right? Mm-hmm. And that really shut down, you know, kind of shut Ehlinger down in the running game. So it leaves, like you said, their experience secondary against our maybe, at this point, still an unproven wide receiver core, right?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, is the game going to come down to that matchup right there, possibly?
Well, it could very well come down to TCU's defensive backs versus Texas's wide receivers if Texas's offensive line can't take care of TCU's defensive line, both of those being the weak points of their respective sides of the ball. But going back to the personnel usage and what personnel usage they should use against TCU, here's the thing is, I would say maybe 11 personnel is okay. Don't do 12. And if you are going to focus on the run, punish their safeties or punish their corners, because the corners are the main things that are the main part of the TCU offense that stop the run.
Mm-hmm.
Punish them and stretch the field. With an offensive line that's having trouble getting pushed downfield, help them out by getting the defense on their heels so that they're already traveling backwards when you try to force them backwards. Before we get onto the TCU, what else do you think went well for Texas against Texas Tech? Let's end off on a positive note.
I mean, Texas forced turnovers. What else went well?
Well, I mean, I know it definitely came with its sore spots of the missed tackles and stuff, but you're right. Forcing turnovers is huge in the Big 12. That is really how you win, is third down stops and forcing turnovers. Killing drives is the key to winning football games in the Big 12.
You saw the special teams come up with some big plays. You had the punt block by Tyler Owens to turn into a touchdown by Jahdae Barron. You saw Texas come up with their onside kick, even though special teams definitely let them down multiple times during the game. Special teams also, they don't win the game without special teams, so I would have to go there.
Yeah, it did win them the game. It also let Texas Tech back in it. If you can clean up special teams, that takes away 14 points from Texas Tech, and that's huge. That's a win. Clean up the special teams, and you win that easy. I think I want to end off this segment with 2 things. The first one, Sam Ehlinger is special, and Longhorn fans, you need to cherish the time that you have to watch Sam Ehlinger in burnt orange. He has the it factor that Texas Longhorn fans have been looking for in a quarterback since Colt McCoy. When you watch him talk to the team, you understand why they have a respect for him. He's a natural public speaker. He's a guy who has charisma. He's a Longhorn through and through. And a guy like him keeps you in ball games regardless of how you play, for example, the Texas Tech game. Now, talking about the Texas Tech game, this is the last note I want to have, is I think it is still early on in the season. I know the issues are frustrating, and we're not going to give the players or the staff a get-out-of-jail-free card for what just happened. However, you had no spring football and a fall camp that was limited. Some of these guys fell back on old habits, and you saw that, especially when it came to the tackling. I mean, a lot of these guys were just diving at the feet. And when you look around the country, and, you know, just up I-35, you can see that other teams are having trouble getting acclimated to the first or second weeks of play. But as the season goes on, teams will improve, as we saw with Kansas State, Iowa State, and Texas Tech. Texas Tech was not the same team against Texas that they were against Houston Baptist. I still think Texas will get better. I think they'll get more consistent as the year goes on. That is something for Texas fans to hang their hat on. Another thing is Texas still won. That is big. your dreams are still alive of the Big 12 championship, and hell, maybe even the college football playoffs, knock on wood. And I think Texas fans can also find some solace in that most teams who've had good years have games like this where they struggle, especially in Lubbock, or Stillwater, or Ames. Those are some places that just give teams trouble. However, at the same time, this needs to be a weird day in Lubbock and not the norm for the year. And on that note, y'all, let's go ahead and bring on Parker Fleming. Is that your last name?
It is my last name, yeah.
I don't know how I knew that. Parker Fleming, a.k.a. Stats of War. He is a wonderful follow on Twitter. Really good stuff there. Also writes for Football Outsiders and does a weekly newsletter and podcast called Purple Theory, which are both worth listening to, reading, and just giving it a click and a try out. So, Parker, let's get right down to it, man. What went wrong against Iowa State for TCU? Let's just go ahead and start off with the hard thing.
Yeah, well, one, thanks for having me. It's great to be on with you guys. Yeah, so what went wrong against Iowa State is a couple things. One, without commenting too deeply on this, there were some reasons that Max Duggan wasn't playing the first half. And so TCU played an underrated walk-on quarterback as their starter for the entire first half. And Matt Downing, I'm not here to slander Matt Downing. Matt Downing performed admirably in the role he was asked to play, given what we know about him and who he is as a player. And so very, very grateful for Downing's willingness to play that role. But TCU basically hamstrung their offense. They had two drives, their first two drives of the game. They had first downs inside the Iowa State 40. They came away with 0 points. And any points on either of those drives would have changed the entirety of the game. And a bigger picture, Jaquan Bailey is what went wrong for TCU in that game. Jaquan Bailey is Iowa State's defensive end. Defensive line for Iowa State was so disruptive, they were able to rush 3 and drop 8 and still get a pass rush. And that just made things really, really hard, especially with the inexperienced quarterback. Max Duggan came in the second half and looked really, really good at times. He did have some rust to shake off. They punted on the first two drives he was in. And then, of course, he, you know, kind of a fluke interception at what could have been the game-winning drive. And Iowa State gets a short field, scores another touchdown. The game's out of reach. Realistically, it was a combination of Iowa State had a game to play before TCU.
Parker, let me stop you right there. Apparently, the game is never out of reach. We learned that.
Well, that I suppose that's true. More so out of reach in the fact that TCU was down 12 and they threw a touchdown with zero seconds left on the clock. So, but yeah, I agree. I suppose that's fair. We shouldn't say totally out of reach. But ultimately, yeah, TCU just had to shake off some rust. They had kind of the first game nonsense that you would have any year. And it just so happened is against a conference opponent. That plus some, shall I say, off-field personnel stuff that dictated who could play in the first half really, really caused TCU to kind of dig a hole they couldn't get out of. They scored 21 points in the second half on offense. Really, really explosive at times. Looked really, really good. But it was too little too late just given what they did in the first half.
Hey, we're hearing what you said about what went wrong. Hey, Texas fans know all about, you know, struggling to block three guys coming, you know, with five. Quick question that all Texas fans, especially recruiting junkies, want to know about. How's Quentin Johnston look so far at TCU?
Quentin Johnston looks really, really good. So TCU released, I don't know if y'all saw, TCU released this depth chart last Wednesday that looked hilarious. Like, it looked like if you had just picked names out of a hat. And Quentin Johnston was second, I think, on that depth chart. And all of us over in TCU land said, nope, absolutely not. Like, he is going to be the guy. And he integrated himself in the offense really nicely. He ended up only having two targets, but was running downfield routes the entire game. He had a touchdown that was really, really nice. It was an underthrow by Matt Downing, the backup in the first quarter, or the first half, rather. He was running in stride. He was able to reach kind of behind his hip, pull this ball in, and then in space, just go find a touchdown. And you just saw this raw, elite athleticism. And if I may be so bold to say grace, like, I don't know that I use that word about a football player, but he just looked graceful on the field. I think expectations for Quentin Johnston are sky high. I think TCU's personnel on wide receiver is so many of these kind of typical TCU 5'10", 185 speedy guys that a guy like Quentin Johnston, who is tall and has a body and still has some of that speed, is going to be just such a valuable weapon to kind of diversify the offensive attack. So good to see him get involved. You know, TCU under Gary Patterson is really, really reluctant to ask too much of freshmen, especially true freshmen. And so as a true freshman, to see him get the number of snaps he got, to see him get kind of, you know, the separation he got on the routes he was running, even if he didn't get the ball, he looked really, really good. He looked like an experienced college receiver as a freshman. Really, really excited about him. I think he will be a name for TCU going forward.
And y'all know you just mentioned y'all have all those, TCU has all those smaller receivers and Quinton's a big guy. You got another one in that same class too that's not getting his chance yet, but will, with Savion Williams from Marshall, similar kind of guy to Quentin Johnston with
yes.
that size and speed.
I think so. And I think it's not unfair to say he's a little less polished than Quentin Johnston is at the start. And so I imagine with John Stevens Jr. and Tavalence Hunt, who Tavalence Hunt didn't play on Friday or Saturday for whatever reason, I would almost hope that Savion Williams redshirts so he can retain that year of eligibility. I guess that's weird this year. Everyone's going to retain that year of eligibility. But in a normal year, I would expect him to redshirt just because of the body size and the depth. But I think absolutely, you know, if he starts doing great in practice, which I've heard really, really good things about him in practice, if he, you know, he could play himself into an opportunity in this offense, especially if Max Duggan looked as good as he did down the stretch. I think having these kind of downfield big bodies is something TCU hasn't had since Josh Doctson. And so to have two guys who could potentially provide that threat in addition to all these, you know, death by a thousand cut speedy guys will be really, really special for TCU's offense.
So Texas had a lot of trouble with Keyshawn Carter against Texas Tech, having the slot wide receiver go up against our spur and linebacker. TCU also has a pretty good slot wide receiver in Tay Barber, who Texas didn't give the time of day. How's Tay Barber doing so far?
So one, I'll get my fan Barb in there and just say, like, Texas fans should be very, very familiar with Tay Barber, given, you know, 5 yards and 90 or 5 receptions for 94 yards last season. Tay Barber was absolutely the workhorse of this TCU offense. He was in space. He was in jet sweep getting the ball. He was running underneath routes. He was running over the top routes. Clearly has a good chemistry with Max Duggan and clearly will be the focal point of the offense. And so I think Tay Barber is very similar to that kind of Jalen Reagor type of player who's a little bit smaller but can also be that downfield talent. I think Tay Barber, not in terms of absolute talent, but in terms of kind of specific skill set, is a little bit more versatile. He's a little more comfortable out of the backfield. Last year, TCU ran a couple sets that featured Barber and a running back in the backfield, and they ran play action and dumped it off to Barber, and he was kind of in open space, and so kind of an alternate screen. So I would expect to see Tay Barber get the ball in myriad ways against Texas, just because he and Max Duggan have a repertoire. He's shifting underneath, and I think they'll focus on him early, hoping that Texas kind of overcorrects, because then TCU will be able to say, hey, we have J.D. Spielman, who's more or less a Tay Barber clone on the other side of the ball and be able to kind of attack the defense on a different dimension, not to mention the over-the-top threat like Quentin Johnston.
Then let's go ahead and take a look at the matchup between Texas and TCU. But first, what are your thoughts on this new-look Texas team and the game that they had last weekend against Texas Tech?
Yeah, so one, I'll say Texas looked great against UTEP, and I really expected them to look great against UTEP. And that, and it's silly to say, but the difference between, you know, looking good against a bad team and looking great against a bad team, I think is pretty informative. So I think I said before the season, Sam Ehlinger is, you know, the best quarterback in the Big 12. And I think that he has just kind of the polish and the skill set that no one else really has, even among, you know, more experienced peers. I think that he has a little bit more, one, he has the benefit of context, but two, he's just got a little bit more stability than Brock Purdy, for instance, who's the obvious comp. And I think he's of a different order than Charlie Brewer, for instance. So I'm interested to see what the new look Texas offense is really like when kind of rubber meets the road, because that hasn't been the case. You know, even though Texas Tech, they kind of had to hit those last couple drives and really do what they could to score, you know, they're still kind of holding stuff back. They're not showing their entire film against Texas Tech, which may be part of the reason that they were struggling early on. But ultimately, like, I think Brennan Eagles is a talent that is just really well utilized in Texas's scheme. And so that is
maybe Have you met Darius? He is not a Brennan Eagles fan.
Okay, I don't know that Brennan Eagles is like an NFL amazing next level talent. I just know that he fits very well with what Texas is going to ask him to do. And again, that's an outsider's opinion. So, like, you probably have more nuance there, but I think that he can play an interesting role for Ehlinger if used correctly. And I also, again, it's a Texas podcast. I know you guys don't want to hear this. I'm not sure I love Tom Herman's offensive mind necessarily. And so I'm interested to see how he can enhance his offensive philosophy with some more established guys like coordinator Yurchik and that. So ultimately, I think with Sam Ehlinger, the type of offense you have to run is pretty narrow generally, in that he's a pretty accurate passer. He's an above average runner. Last year, Texas was like, you know, ninth in the Big 12 in yards per play on first down, and then fifth on second down, and then first on third down, because they were just consistent across first, second, third down generally. If they can just add a little bit of explosiveness, which against UTEP, it really looked like it did. And then at the end against Texas Tech, it looked like they kind of had this explosive, a little bit more high octane offense. I think that they'll be able to have a really special year on offense.
I'm just giving you crap for stepping into something that you had no idea was there.
Hey, look, I'm here to wildly speculate with only a little bit of information. So,
oh, I understand. That's what we do here on the regular.
I mean, hell, I don't think Brennan Eagles would agree with you that he thinks he's a good fit, or that Tom Herman has a great offensive mind. Y'all might agree on that, but moving forward, how do you think TCU would try to attack Texas on both sides of the ball, and vice versa? If you were Texas, where would you attack TCU?
Yeah, so I want to start on the defensive side of the ball for TCU, because specifically TCU gave up three unacceptable big plays last week against Iowa State. And some of that was early down, or some of that was like early season, first game kind of nonsense. Some of that was the 4-2-5 has some pretty Gary Patterson's base defense has some pretty obvious points to attack. And Matt Campbell is a great defensive mind, and he had some stuff on film. So TCU has two amazing secondaries, Trayvon Merring and Ardarius Washington. PFF graded them the two highest safeties in the nation, no qualifiers last season. Really, really great talent. Both will get drafted in the first three rounds of the NFL this year. And just amazing talents. Both of them got burned on rushing plays. Specifically, they got burned because they were trying to overcompensate for a weak defensive line and crashing down in the middle on rush plays. And Iowa State just had a receiver veer far enough to create a lane to the outside. Iowa State's running back Breece Hall was able to break outside and score on two big runs. The other Iowa State's running back also had a touchdown. I don't want to discredit him. I just can't. I can't recall his name off the top of my head. But three big runs that were very specifically targeting the overeagerness of TCU's safeties. And so I think that's something that's on film. I think TCU will definitely try and correct it. But run fits are run fits. And so the way the 4-2-5 really, really works is the same. And so being able to have insight in that, TCU is going to have to adapt and kind of coach those safeties up. But I think there's a lot of opportunity to have rushing success against TCU, specifically if you exploit the fact that the defensive line for TCU is not making a lot of stops. They're not getting a lot of pressure on the pass rush, but specifically they're not making a lot of run stops. And so I think that'll be fruitful for them.
I gotta be honest, I'm drawing a little bit of a blank on last year's game, but I'm just getting flashbacks of the last six or seven meetings with TCU, and I'm just having a hard time remembering anything positive.
I have some numbers up about that. I mean, Texas had, you know, a 47% rushing success rate, but only a 27% success rate. But I think more importantly, where that stands out is if you look at standard downs. So if you divide the game into standard and passing downs, standard downs is like first downs and then, you know, second and more than four. And then passing down is second and four or less, and then third downs that are short. Kind of this idea of like, hey, there's obvious tendencies here. Texas was only 35% on standard downs. So when the game was open and they were able to dictate what they wanted to do, they didn't succeed. And so ultimately, I think that's going to give you kind of some insight into like Texas last year. They had rushing success, but it was mostly on later downs and mostly on Sam Ehlinger being able to kind of find opportunities to pick up some yards here and there. And so I think that run blocking is definitely a prescient insight there. And I think that more designed runs from Ehlinger and from the running backs will definitely help Texas kind of take advantage of the 4-2-5 insofar as TCU's defensive line is not shown a lot of promise in their one game this weekend.
Well, if I can go off script real quick.
Go ahead.
And I haven't watched the Iowa State game yet at all. So against UTEP, I thought Texas did a great job with RPO action and hitting, you know, skinny posts, hitting, you know, stuff up the field. I thought this past game against Texas Tech, I thought they ran some RPO action, but it was lateral stuff like bubbles, you know what I'm saying, quick hits to the guys outside. when you just mentioned about how aggressive those safeties are for TCU, could we possibly go back to seeing the UTEP game plan compared to the Texas Tech game plan, like you mentioned earlier? Could we start seeing more off RPO action, those shots up the field, you know, by drawing those safeties in? I'm wondering.
I think that's good. I think actually, though, the problem with that is going to be D. Winters, TCU's second linebacker. So Garrett Wallow, all Big 12 preseason, kind of a really, really talented upperclassman experienced linebacker in Gary Patterson's offense. D. Winters is kind of the underclassman, underproved guy, and seems to be a really, really great linebacker talent. He was on Charlie Kolar a lot, and he found Brock Purdy in space and made some excellent tackles and seems to be a pretty good talent. And so actually where Iowa State found success was kind of to the outside on the passing game. I think they had one long, you know, 60 or 70 yard pass that was kind of the result of TCU. It fell through the cracks, honestly. And so that RPO game, I think, could be productive if Texas has rushing success early and the TCU kind of keys on that. But I do think that, one, the aggression of the safeties is going to be on film. And then two, TCU having, you know, in the past, TCU's had an amazing linebacker and then a pretty good linebacker. And this year they have two, I'll go so far to say they have two amazing linebackers. And so I think that as Ardarius Washington and Trayvon Merriman get more comfortable with the talent around them, they might be less susceptible to that.
If so, you did the defense for TCU. What about the offense?
Okay, so the offense for TCU, I think, is going to one kind of problem for TCU on offense last week was that Imari DeMercado, the third-year JUCO transfer, really, really a solid running back. He had 5 targets in the passing game, which tells you that they're checking down a lot. And so I think that TCU was running still a few too many slow-developing routes. So I think that this week they'll actually try and run a little bit more traditional air raid, especially with Max Duggan. More of that, Duggan puts his foot in the ground, throws the ball to a receiver who turns around, we catch it, we get 6 yards, we get to the field. I don't know if both of you remember, this is kind of a joke in TCU Twitter at this point, but my favorite TCU drive of last year was one they didn't score on. It was at the end of the first half versus Texas. TCU moved the ball like 80 yards in like 62 seconds because they went air raid 100% to the max. They were running stick and mesh alternatively over and over again, just moved the ball down, and they ran out of time and couldn't score. But I think if TCU wants to succeed, given what Max Duggan looked like last year, given that the offensive line looks a little uncertain, is what I'll say about college athletes, a little unstable, I think TCU quick timing, release, try and get more possession receptions. And then you're going to see a lot more with Doug Meacham, the offensive coordinator, being back at TCU. You know, he was there 2014, 2015. You're going to see a lot more jet sweep and actual action off the jet sweep, not just moving people around. And so I think those are the two areas that TCU will try and attack. It won't be so much bubble screens and speed and space like that. It will be possession receptions and then kind of that jet sweep, get around the edge.
And then where should Texas attack their offense?
Texas should bring 4. So they're running the 3-4 under Chris Ash, if I'm not mistaken.
4-3.
So they're switching 4-3. That's great. Okay. I had that backwards in my head. I think Texas should blitz. Max Duggan in the second half wasn't really pressured because Iowa State was ahead, so they were able to kind of sit back a little bit. So we don't have a lot of information there. But ultimately, I think that given what TCU's offensive line looked like last week, given that the same 5 guys who started against Iowa State are probably not starting against Texas, I think pass rush can really be the dominant game there. And then I think specifically if Texas can kind of play the no doubles defense, knowing where Quentin Johnson is and just saying like, hey, you might break a long play. We're just going to make sure that long play isn't a, you know, 70 yard touchdown. It's only, you know, a 20 yard gain once every couple, once a drive or something. I think if you can kind of limit the explosiveness over the top and then you could bring a pass rush to get to Max Duggan, you could be disruptive enough in the offense to do one of two things, either severely disrupt TCU's offensive plan and make them fail at it, or convince them to switch to running the ball more, which will on average be less efficient and their offense will be a little slower.
That's if Texas can take them down, especially a guy like Tay Barber. But Darius, what are your thoughts on that?
That's what concerns me a little bit. He was just saying the Texas pass rush, right?
Mm-hmm.
Texas pass rush hadn't been any good the first 2 games. You know, so if it's not Joseph Osai, who's getting the pressure?
Mm-hmm.
So that worries me. And then you're saying, you know, TCU needs to go to the quick game. Well, I mean, if you remember our guy CJ Vogel's post earlier, I mean, what was it? Tech was 7 of 9 on slants, 9 of 12 on hitches. Like, they can have that all day. And Texas, the first guy's not making the tackle 70% of the time. So now we got Tay Barber breaking the first tackle. Oh, my goodness. The Valus Hunt, Quentin Johnston. That scares me to death. I don't feel good about it. I didn't feel good about it going in, and it kind of just bagged up those concerns for me, honestly.
Yeah. So, Darius, you want to go? You got the next one.
Yeah, sure. If you were Gary Patterson, who's one player off the Texas roster that you would put on the TCU roster?
Well, so I think I have two answers here. One, I think my initial answer would be to say Joseph Asai, but TCU does have Marcel Brooks and someone who's not as talented as Joseph Asai. Don't hear me saying that, but in the mold of an exceptional edge rusher, and they haven't figured out how to use him yet. So I think actually I'm going to flip to the offensive side of the ball and say an offensive anchor like Samuel Cosmi is just a really, really great thing for TCU's offensive line. That's undoubtedly the most unstable position group on TCU's entire team. And so to have someone like that absolutely locked down, you're an elite talent, you're going to take care of this, and then we can work around you, that certainty, I think, is invaluable overall. I think TCU has the athletes at wide receiver to do what they want to do. I'm high on Max Duggan's upside. Obviously, you'd want an experienced senior quarterback over a inexperienced sophomore quarterback. I get that totally. But if it was like only one change I could make, I think actually the offensive line with Max Duggan would be a bigger improvement than TCU's terrible offensive line with Sam Ehlinger. So while I think about the quarterback, I think that Samuel Cosmi would be my answer there.
And on the other side of it, and I'll let you take this question however you want, what player from TCU would you put on Texas's roster?
If you were Tom Herman.
No, or just in general.
I was going to say Matt Downing starting for Texas. That's mean to Matt Downing. Again, Matt Downing did a great job for what he did. I shouldn't say anything yet. I think if I was Tom Herman, I want Trayvon Merrick. I know that Texas has athletes. I know that Texas has guys in the backfield that can make plays. I think Trayvon Merrick is kind of that next level defender. And so I think he would be the kind of guy that I would go to. A lot of that is me speaking to what I watched from Texas last year, in that like TCU torched Texas because Texas really had nothing in the secondary at that game. And so I think that's where I would go. Again, if I was just like an opposing coach, I could see wanting Tay Barber. I could see wanting Pro Wells. But I think Merrick is my answer just because he's probably the best player. Yeah, I don't know. What do y'all think? Y'all obviously know more about Texas and know needs. Yeah.
Would you say Trey Merrick is what Caden Stearns is supposed to be?
I think the biggest argument for Caden Stearns is that Texas was really bad when Caden Stearns was hurt last year. I think that's probably true. I think that Stearns might be a player when the pressure is not entirely on him, when he doesn't have to be the number one guy, might like flourish. But I think that's probably ultimately fair to say.
And I would say I would want Garrett Wallow, because Texas is really, really weak right now at linebacker. Juwan Mitchell was being eaten alive by Keyshawn Carter. If you had a guy like Garrett Wallow or even D. Winters, Texas's biggest weakness this year, and the only thing that's probably, besides not being able to tackle, but the biggest thing that's stopping them from being able to be like an elite team, that linebacker position is solved.
Definitely. And I think Wallow is underrated insofar he's on the Big 12, you know, preseason team or whatever, but like a really solid talent. One of those kind of classic Gary Patterson. He started out as a safety freshman year. There were injuries, so he switched to linebacker. He gained 30 pounds and then learned the system and became this really great linebacker. So a really cool success story. And then someone who's really, really talented. So I think that isn't a bad answer at all.
So last question for you, what do you think happens in this game? Both Darius and I are going to take TCU to cover the 16 points that they were given to Texas for some odd reason. Nobody in Vegas knows, has ever watched Texas. They don't know who Max Duggan is. So what do you think happens?
Man, I'm trying to divorce my fan and my analyst here right now. So I can give you a lot of ifs. If Max Duggan is actually going to play as well this year as he did in the second half last week against a very good Iowa State defense. And if the offensive line cannot be just a Swiss cheese standing up there and protect him and give him some time to throw, I think TCU will score points. I think they have kind of a multiplicity of weapons that they haven't had in previous years. I think this is going to be less of a shootout than Texas Tech, obviously. Lubbock, no one's going to match the weirdness that happens in Lubbock every year. But I think this will be pointy, if I can go so far to say that. I think that Sam Ehlinger is going to have a really good game on the ground, specifically because TCU's defensive ends and pass rush are really, really kind of the weak point in that defense. And so, you know, if you've got a great back seven and a weak front four, I think Ehlinger will be able to make hay with designed runs and with scrambles. So ultimately, I think that it's definitely closer. I think TCU will cover. I'm still picking Texas. I just have to go experience at quarterback and then kind of just general overall talent there. Especially Texas now has had two games to play. TCU's only had one. Max Duggan realistically, you know, played two drives of meaningful football on Saturday. And so ultimately, I think TCU covers, Texas wins. There's a lot more points than TCU Texas is used to, though.
I like that answer. I mean,
great stuff.
That's a good. It's
win-win for me because either I sound smart or I'm happy that TCU won. So
right now, I've always said that if Texas is ever in the national championship, I'm putting $1,000 on whoever they're playing, so that either I win $1,000 or I buy a national championship for $1,000. It's a win-win right there. That's exactly what you just did. But y'all, that was Parker Fleming. Parker, Stats of War on Twitter. Where else can we follow you? I mean, really, y'all should follow Stats of War on Twitter. Yeah. But where else can we find you?
Yeah, so Stats of War on Twitter is the place. Me and Grant McGalliard run a newsletter called Purple Theory. We have some friends from time to time. I actually think we should call this the crossover week because Darius is going to come on the podcast on Wednesday. And then, Will, I think you're going to answer a couple questions for us on Friday. So a good, nice crossover TCU Texas week there. But you can find that at purpletheory.substack.com. And then the Purple Theory podcast comes out on Thursday mornings and Monday mornings with the recap anywhere podcasts are found.
Yeah, and Stats of War, you Parker, if you didn't know, is a good follow, even if you're not a TCU fan.
I appreciate that. I try and do generally applicable content. Also, along those lines, my Football Outsiders employers would be unhappy if I didn't plug. Every Monday morning, I do a advanced stats recap of the weekend for Football Outsiders called One Foot in Bounds. So that posts on Monday afternoons at footballoutsiders.com. A fun way to kind of look at what happened over the weekend and some interesting stats that I see. So you can also find my writing there.
Great stuff. Well, thank you for coming on, Parker. We appreciate it.
Yeah, enjoy it, guys.
Anyways, that has been your 4th and 5 podcast. I've been your host, Will Baizer. You guys can find me on Twitter at WILLBAIZER. And my man, DT, where can we find you?
You can find me on Twitter as well, DTERRELL05. Hit me up. In the meantime, root us on this year. Go Eagles. Come on, Texas. You can do this. You can do this weekend. Will, you got a prediction?
For the game?
Yeah.
You're just trying to get me for the know your opponent thing already?
What you mean? Oh, yeah.
69-10. It's my go-to.
Oh, damn. TCU dominated.
Yeah, I don't know. I usually wait for the Vegas odds and I just use those. But I don't trust those this week. So I'm going to go, like, let's say 38 to 35 or 38-31. Sounds good? I think that sounds good. Texas. I'll go Texas. I'll give Texas his win, hopefully. But we'll see. I don't feel good about it. That's not a very confident prediction. But I think you guys can find us and our other stuff on the Hornscast channel, which you can find right here, and any other podcasting platforms that you might listen to. Or you can find our writings on texas.thefootballbrainiacs.com. Thank y'all for listening, and we will see y'all next week. Hook 'em.
Hook 'em. Okay.